Welcome to the James River Church podcast. You're about to hear another inspirational message from Pastor John Lindell. It's our prayer that this message is an encouragement and blessing to your life.
Today I want to talk to you about something I think is really, really important for Christians to understand, and that is a heart for the poor. A heart for the poor, which this is applicable for Christians in any context, any city, any area, but especially for Christians living in Southwest Missouri. When we're talking about the poor, here's the way the poor would be indexed according to the U.S. government. If a one-person household has an annual income of $12,488 or less, then they're living in poverty. So two-person household income, less than $15,800, they're in poverty. So it goes through, shows you kind of the threshold. What's interesting to note is that in Springfield, Missouri, if we take the city proper, 32.9% of people live in poverty. Which tells you, if you just want to put numbers to it, there are 167,000 people that live in Springfield. That tells you there are 55,000 people in Springfield living in poverty. I mean, one in three people that you meet in Springfield is living in poverty. If you go down to Jasper County, I included Jasper County because Joplin's the county seat of Jasper County. So 29% of people in Jasper County are living in poverty, which means approximately 34,000 people in Jasper County are living in poverty. And so what you have compared to the rest of the state of Missouri, you have a substantially greater number of people living in poverty in Southwest Missouri than in the rest of the state. So what we're talking about is very, very applicable for us as people who live in Southwest Missouri. And so in the next few moments, what I want to do is I want to talk to you about why should we have a heart for the poor, and give you a bit of a theological understanding for God's view of the poor, our responsibility to the poor. And I'm thankful to be a part of a church that is incredibly generous. And whether it's Season of Giving, whether it's the Preschool Academy, whether it's other things that we do throughout the year to help the poor, there's a lot that's being done. But here's my concern. When we're in a church where a lot's being done and we're living in a community that has a tremendous network of agencies and entities, whether it's Ozarks Food Harvest, whether it's Crosslines, whether it's the Kitchen, whether it's Victory Mission, all of these Salvation Army, all of these different agencies and entities that are caring for the poor, here's my concern, that we don't say, well, they'll do it. But that all of us understand, while we collectively have a responsibility as a church to care for the poor, we individually also have a responsibility to care for the poor. That it's not enough for James River to care for the poor. It's not enough for Victory Mission to care for the poor. It's not enough for Convoy of Hope to care for the poor. But every single believer has a responsibility for personal interaction relative to caring for the poor. Why? Well, first of all, God has a heart for the poor. God cares about the poor. We care about the poor because God cares about the poor. Remember in Ephesians 5 and verse 1, as dearly beloved children, be imitators of God. Whatever we see God do, that's what we do. Jesus said, I only do what I see my Father doing. God cares about the poor. God has a heart for the poor. Deuteronomy chapter 15, we read this, but if there are any poor Israelites in your towns, when you arrive in the land the Lord your God has given you, do not be hard-hearted or tight-fisted toward them. In other words, don't say, well, if you want to get a job, the unemployment rate's never been lower. Or you wouldn't be poor if you didn't do this or that. God says, listen, That's not our place to render judgment on the poor. Because when we set ourselves up as the judge of the poverty of the poor, then we are occupying a place of being hard-hearted and ultimately tight-fisted. Because if you think somebody is to blame for their poverty, you're going to do a lot less for them to meet the need of their poverty. God says, instead, be generous and lend them whatever they need. That's an amazing whatever they need. It's not like what you think they need. It's whatever they need. Lend them. Give generously to the poor, not grudgingly, for the Lord your God will bless you in everything you do. Here's what God is saying. Listen, you're my hands. You're my feet extended. You're my representation on earth. So I care for the poor, and I'm going to care for the poor through you. And when you give to the poor, I'm going to give back to you. When you bless them, I'm going to bless you. And this is all over the scriptures. God cares about the poor so much so that he says, when you help them, I will help you. Look at it, Psalm 41 and verse 1. Oh, the joys of those who are kind to the poor. You know, they say Christmas is one of the seasons where people struggle with depression, sadness. If somebody wants to be, if you're a person, and I'm not minimizing your struggle with that, I'm just suggesting a biblical antidote, maybe helping the poor. The joys of those who are kind to the poor. The Lord rescues them when they're in trouble. You be kind to the poor and watch God help you in the midst of your trouble. This is the promise of the Lord. When you help the poor, he helps you. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 9 says, a generous man will himself be blessed. Why is a generous man blessed? For he shares his food with the poor. Listen, when you're generous with the poor, God says, I'm going to bless that person because they were kind to the poor. Proverbs 28 and verse 27, whoever gives to the poor will lack nothing, but those who close their eyes to poverty will be cursed. In other words, if you say, you know what, there's a lot of poor, but I don't know any, so don't go there. To say, because I don't know a poor person, I don't have a responsibility to the poor, is to close your eyes to the poor. And when you do that, you're cutting yourself off from the blessing of God, the hand of God, and God's help in your own situation. Proverbs 19 and verse 17. If you help the poor, you are lending to the Lord. This is a very important concept in the Bible. We're going to look at it when we get toward the close of the end of the message. What did Jesus say? I'm going to give you a sneak preview of what's coming up. When you did it to the least of these, my brothers, you did it to who? Me. God so has a heart for the poor. Think of this. He identifies with the poor, and he says, whatever you do for the poor, it's as if you did it for me. If you give to them, it's like you're lending to the Lord. And watch this. He'll repay you. How many know this? God, if he's going to repay somebody, is not only going to repay in full, but God will make sure he doesn't owe you anything. You can believe he'll repay over and above. In other words, God is generous to people who are kind to the poor. Here's what he's saying. You and I don't need to be afraid, because oftentimes what keeps people from giving is we're like, but if I give that, then what if I don't have enough? And God says, not going to happen. You take care of the poor, I'll take care of you. You have a relationship with me, you take care of them, I'll take care of you. Proverbs 21, verse 13, those who shut their ears to the cries of the poor will be ignored in their own time of need. In other words, one of the things that we need to do is be sensitive, because we can get so self-centered, so self-absorbed, especially during a busy time like this, That we're not aware of the needs around us, circumstances around us, so busy trying to get through the checkout line at the grocery store, not aware of the person behind us who doesn't have much, can't afford much, and they're struggling, and it would be a great opportunity to help them. To just say, you know what, I'm gonna stop long enough, I'm gonna get a hold of myself, I'm gonna say, Lord, help me to see the needs. I'm not gonna close my ears to the cries of the poor. Listen, if there are 55,000 people in Springfield who are living in poverty, there are people all around us who need help. The issue is not, where are they? The issue is, are you listening to their cries? Proverbs 14 and verse 31, those who oppress the poor insult their maker. A person says, you know what? Go get a job. Why don't you stop using meth? Or, you know what? They made a bunch of bad decisions. All they have to do is, God says when you denigrate the poor, when you do that, when you oppress them, when you refuse them help, when you give them less than you'd give yourself, and it's in your power to give them more than you are to meet their need, you're insulting God. But when you help the poor, you're honoring God. Why? Because God identifies with the poor. You know, listen, think of this. Jesus, though he was rich, Paul says, became poor for our sakes. He identifies with the poor. We have a God who identifies with the poor. That's why he has a heart with the poor, and he calls us to be people who identify with the poor. All of those verses tell us God cares about the poor, and how you and I, the poor, will determine how God treats us. If we're generous with the poor, God will be generous with us. If we hold back from the poor, God will hold back from us. And you see all over the Old Testament. Time to cover half of them, but when you come to the New Testament, Jesus inaugurates his ministry by identifying with the poor. It's very, very interesting to me. He's in the synagogue at Nazareth, and the way a synagogue works is they're going to have a reading from the law, from the Torah. They're going to have a reading from the prophets, and these are laid out. It's a lectionary. It's laid out at the start of the year so that you get through the whole Old Testament in not every single word, but you get through it in a systematized reading of it week by week. So when Jesus comes into the synagogue at Nazareth to launch his ministry, he's not saying, hand me the scroll, and they're like, oh, this is not the one I want. Do you got the one on Isaiah? He's not doing that. It's the reading for the day. He gets up, and in the order, the providence, the leading of the Lord, he gets up, he unrolls the day's reading, and here's what it starts with. Look at it, Luke chapter 4 and verse 18. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me to do what? He has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. I know some will say, well, that's the poor in spirit. I get that, but he doesn't qualify that there. He identifies with the poor in spirit and with the poor, period. And he says the Spirit of God has anointed him to do ministry to the poor. Do you understand that as a follower of Christ, following in his footsteps, that God not only calls us to minister to the poor, God has anointed us to minister to the poor? You don't have to pray, Lord, anoint me to minister. No, you've already been anointed. If the Spirit of God is on you, a part of that anointing is to minister to the poor. What? The good news. And Jesus' ministry was certainly one of giving to the poor, even though he lived the life of an itinerant preacher and was the recipient of offerings to fund his ministry. Out of those offerings, he gave offerings to the poor. We know this because on the night he was betrayed, he says to Judas, whatever you're going to do, go and do quickly. And we read this in John chapter 13. In verse 29, since Judas was their treasurer, some thought Jesus was telling him to go and pay for the food or to give some money to the poor. Why? Because that's something Jesus did all the time. He had a heart for the poor. The apostles in the New Testament understood the not only the necessity and the responsibility to the poor, but the priority to the poor. It's very, very interesting. When you come to Galatians chapter 2, Paul is telling his story. It's kind of a testimonial. And essentially what happens, what Paul has already told us in Galatians up to this point, is the Lord gave him his understanding of the gospel. So Paul gets saved. Paul travels down to Mount Sinai, and at Mount Sinai receives the gospel directly from the Lord Jesus Christ. He goes back to Damascus. He starts preaching the gospel. He escapes because they're going to try to kill him. And Paul says, you know what? I need to go down to Jerusalem. I need to tell Peter, James, John, all the apostles, the gospel I'm preaching, because I want to make sure my gospel is consistent with their gospel, that we're all saying the same thing. Paul's a man who values unity. When he's there and he presents it to them, here's what we read. And they encouraged us to keep preaching to the Gentiles while they continued their work with the Jews. Their only suggestion was that we keep on helping the poor, which I've always been eager to do. So here's the priority that the early church places on ministering to the poor, on gospel ministry. Yes, preach the gospel, but don't forget the poor. Think of all the things they could have encouraged him to do. Preach the gospel, but don't forget. What's the one thing they put there? The poor. Remember the poor. This is really central to Christianity. That we preach the gospel, but we remember the poor. That we preach the gospel, but we're sensitive to those who are in poverty. This is New Testament Christianity. God has a heart for the poor. Number two, every person. We have a heart for the poor because every person is valuable and precious in God's sight. Every person is valuable and precious in God's sight. Every human being is made in the image of God. Only human dogs, especially not cats, are not made in the image of God, okay? No animal is equal to a human being. Only human beings are made in the image of God, which is why human beings are valuable, exceptionally valuable. It's why the church, I'm talking about through the ages, has been the one to show compassion when no one else has. It's why the hospitals that we have today, largely started by Christians, in fact, almost exclusively started by Christians in history. The church caring for the sick, the church caring for the diseased. When the plagues would sweep the Roman Empire, the Christians would stay in the cities at great risk to themselves and would care for the destitute and the dying. Why? Because Christians understood that people, men and women, regardless of the illness, regardless of their economic ability or inability, are made in the image of God. That gives them dignity. That gives them value, that merits care to be given to them. The poor are not a problem. The poor are people. Yes. And until we treat people that way, we've missed the mark. They're not a problem to be solved. They're people who are suffering. They're people who merit more than just a contribution. They're people who merit a conversation. They're people who merit compassion. Because that's what gives somebody dignity. That's what gives somebody value. That's what gives somebody worth. Listen, unless you've been in a situation where your worldly belongings will all fit in a used Walmart bag, you don't really understand that when that's all you have and that's all you got, that invariably there's something about being in that situation that robs you of a sense not only of dignity, but of personhood. And somebody tossing a dollar or handing a dollar and moving on is not the same as somebody who finds out your name, finds out where you're from, and asks how they can help you. There's a big, big difference. And God calls us to do more than lay some cash out or put a few coins in the red kettle. Should you do it? Yes. But what I want to do is relieve you of the misunderstanding that somehow if you put some coins in the red kettle, you've done your deal for the poor. Or because you gave in the season of giving, or because you did whatever it is you did in the way of working through an entity. Should you do that? Yes. But if we're going to change the community, honestly, if money to organizations was going to change the community, it would have been changed long ago. What the poor need is what every person needs if they're going to experience life change. They need relationship. They need somebody who is going to care enough to have conversation. Somebody who is gonna take the time to find out how they can help meaningfully, and then, as much as possible, follow up. To walk that person through the ups and downs, because honestly, there could be a whole lot more downs than there ever are ups. This is Christian compassion. This is God's heart for the poor. It's not a few bucks in the kettle. It's taking and really investing yourself. In Isaiah chapter 58, it's a passage on fasting. It's not the kind of fasting where you go without food. It's the kind of fasting where you care about the poor. So instead of, it's a fast where you forget about yourself, maybe is a better way to put it. And esteem others as more important than yourself. The picture in Isaiah 58, and I'm going to set the stage because we're going to come back to it in the third point, is Yom Kippur, the Jewish Day of Atonement. So what the high priest would do is he would offer a sacrifice for his own sin, and then he would offer a sacrifice for the sins of the people, and then for the only time during the whole Jewish calendar year, he would take a portion of the blood from those sacrifices. He would go back through the temple, through the holy place, into the most holy place, and stand before the Ark of the Covenant, and he would sprinkle the blood of the sacrifice on the mercy seat. And the Jewish people would be outside, and they would be watching this, and it would speak to them about the need for atonement, would speak to them about their own inadequacy personally to live a righteous life before the Lord. They would need the blood covering, and it would be a call for them to be right in their human relationships, and right in Isaiah chapter 58 is measured in how we respond to people who are suffering injustice, especially the poor. The people, though, are coming to God, and the chapter starts with the people saying, "We're fasting, but God, you're not answering." Verse 2, Yet they act so pious. They come to the temple every day and seem delighted to learn all about me. They act like a righteous nation that would never abandon the laws of God. They ask me to take action on their behalf, pretending they want to be near me. Verse 3, they say this, "We have fasted before you. Why aren't you impressed? We've been very hard on ourselves and you don't even notice it." God says, "I'll tell you why. It's because you're fasting to please yourselves. Even while you fast, you keep oppressing your workers." Verse 4, what good is fasting when you keep on fighting and quarreling? This kind of fasting will never get you anywhere with me. You humble yourselves by going through the motions of penance, bowing your heads like reeds, bending in the wind. You dress in burlap, cover yourselves with ashes. Is this what you call fasting? Do you really think this will please the Lord? Here's what's going on. They're showing up at the temple. They're doing all the pious ritual. They're outwardly appearing to honor and worship God. But the weightier things, they're forgetting. Like what? Verse 6. "No, this is the kind of fasting I want. Free those who are wrongly imprisoned. Lighten the burden of those who work for you. Let the oppressed go free and remove the chains that bind people." It's a call for justice. God says, "I want a people who care about justice." And then he defines it. He narrows in. And here's the area where I really want you. It's not that we couldn't expand and talk about other areas, but on Isaiah 58, the level of justice or the scope of justice has to do with how the poor are treated. Look at it, verse 7. "Share your food with the hungry and give shelter to the homeless. Give clothes to those who need them, and do not hide from relatives who need your help." God is saying, "I want you to act justly. I want you to help people." And how should you help people? Verse 10, look at it. "Pour yourself out for the hungry." It's not like, if you have some leftover change in your glove box, find it and throw it, or in the bottom of your purse or your pocket, throw it in the offering, or give it to the person on the street or to the Red Kettle. And I'm not against those things. I'm just saying, too many times people have the idea that that means, "Oh, I've done my deal for the poor," and that's not it at all. The idea of pouring yourself out is literally giving what you have for the poor. Let me put it this way. When's the last time you were going to buy a coat, but you said, "Instead of buying the coat, I'm going to take the money I would spend on buying a coat, and I'm going to go either buy a coat of similar quality for somebody who doesn't, or I'm going to use that money, and I'm going to multiply it in the lives of people." And the idea of pouring yourself out isn't just giving your money, it's giving yourself. So we're too easily programmed to think in terms of the gift of an offering or the writing of a check has absolved our responsibility. And I'm going to tell you, poverty will not be solved with money. There's a lot of problems in poverty that cannot be solved with money. Is money a part of the answer? Yes. But poverty will be solved with relationship. I mean, we watch in preschool academy. So we take that preschool academy. They tell us up front, which for those who are new, preschool academy, there's, you know, a big poverty initiative in the city. So we're, you know, zone 4 is the northwest part of Springfield. There's a huge need over there. So I talk to some city leaders. I say, "What could James River do that would be meaningful, that what would be a strength we have that you see as being helpful in that area, that context?" They said, "Oh, you, one of the things you're really good at is preschool. You got one of the best preschools in the area. Your test scores are the highest. So why don't you do a free preschool for kids down there?" So we go down there to do this, and people that we're working with tell us, hey, listen, you know what? You're gonna have 100% turnover because that's, you know, within the Springfield Public Schools in those areas that are highly, that have a high concentration of poverty, they have 100% turnover in the school in the year, could more than once. So, you know, people are moving because again, when you're in poverty, there's a cycle and a culture that brings, it's not the irresponsibility of people, it's the cycle of poverty and the way things work that oftentimes, due to forces beyond the control of the person, result in them moving from here to here to here and moving around. So what we do is we start this, 2 years into this thing, we have 80% retention. And people's lives are being radically changed. Here's why. Because we're linking people with people. We're linking those families, whether they're a single parent family or they're a traditional family or an untraditional family. We're linking them with people relationally on a regular basis to help them process the decisions, the dilemmas, the problems of life. And yes, it's two steps forward, one step backward. Sometimes it's one step forward, two steps backward. But you're walking with them, you're doing life with them, you're giving them a hand, you're giving them your heart, you're connecting them in a way that brings to bear all the things they need to lift them. Education's part of it, finances are part of it, wisdom's part of it, connection's part of it, all these things that people need to learn how to do a healthy life. This is what it means to pour yourself out. Who do you know? And what could you do to help people? Or just simply to have the conversation with somebody to let them know how much you care. Isaiah 58 and verse 7, again, share your food with the hungry, give shelter to the homeless, give clothes to those who need them, and do not hide from relatives who need their help. It's a very interesting last part of the verse. It speaks to two things. First of all, do not hide from them. You know, don't turn away. Don't look the other direction. Don't, when you see a need, don't, you know, you're driving up. This is not a commentary on the safety or whatever of somebody that is trying to get donations at a street intersection, but rather than turning away and acting like you don't see them, rather than acting like they're not there, which only contributes to that person's sense of inhumanity, of being inconsequential. When you ignore the poor, the message you're communicating is, even God doesn't see you. When you find out a name and you have a conversation and you let them know that they matter to you, along the way they begin to have hope that they matter to God. Simply saying that's what it is to pour ourselves out for the poor. And if anybody ought to be doing it ought to be the church. And when I say the church, I mean you. Church isn't this building. Church is you. It's us. He says, be available. It also says, and do not hide from your relatives. And that's really, that's an unfortunate translation. Now we could build the case very readily that you should take care of your relatives. I mean, Paul says that in 1 Timothy chapter 5. He says, if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he's denied the faith. So don't run around saying you're a Christian and you got family members who are in poverty. You say, yeah, but they, listen, it doesn't matter, yeah, but they. What matters is they're in poverty, they need help, they need love. If you don't help them, you've denied the faith, you're worse than an unbeliever. And that can be extremely heartbreaking. I've been very close to people who have children who are homeless. And it's heart-wrenching, but the right call is to continue to reach out to them and to help them. But what it's talking about, Isaiah 58 and verse 7, if we could bring that up again, and do not hide from relatives who need your help. That phrase, relatives who need your help, is a very interesting phrase. It's not translated as relatives anywhere else in the Old Testament. It's the idea, everywhere else it's translated, it would read something like this, and proclaim to the people. So the idea is that when you and I help people, help the poor, we're proclaiming to them, and it's the idea of proclaim to your people. It's as if we're proclaiming to them, you're my people. Do you get what I'm saying? That we're one race. We're one race. We're the human race. That we may have a different color of skin and have a different accent and have different values and have a different story, but we're humans. Made in the image of God. And that gives each person we meet dignity and value. And that's how we're to live the gospel out. In Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 2, it says this, the rich and the poor have this in common, the Lord made them both. You may be from a different background, you may have different values, you may have different politics, you may have a different belief system, but God made everybody. And in that there's a commonality. They're our brothers and sisters. We're made in the image of God. People are valuable. Not the people that you think are valuable or that you find valuable or who do valuable things. All people are valuable. And this is an ethic of Christianity from the get-go. Number three. We have a heart for the poor because God has a heart for the poor. We have a heart for the poor because people are valuable. Number three, we have a heart for the poor because we were poor and God graciously gave to us. We were poor. In Isaiah 58, again, you know, they're celebrating Yom Kippur, and it was supposed to remind them, you know, that their good works were never going to be enough. They needed a sacrifice to atone for sin, which was pointing to Jesus Christ. And the humbling should have said this, that on my own, I'm not enough. I'm a sinner saved by grace, so I'm going to live humbly before God. But instead, what they did is they were living a self-centered life. And God's saying, listen, if you really understood my grace and you really understood what I've done for you, when you saw a need, you would try to meet it. This is the basis of Christian charity. This is the basis of our giving our lives to others. We have received the grace of the Lord. We have received a gift we could never repay, a gift we never deserved, a gift we could not afford. In our poverty, Jesus, who was rich, was made poor for us that we might become rich in him, right? That's what Paul says. He suffered injustice. He gave his life. He shed his blood. He gave us righteousness because we had none. We were spiritual beggars, and he adopted us and made us children of the king. We had nothing. He gave us everything. When you understand that, when you understand what Jesus did for you, then you will never look at the poor and the suffering in the same way again. Jesus loved so much that he gave and gave and gave. And here's Jesus' word to us. Freely you have received. Freely give. In the same over-the-top way that you've received, in the same over-the-top way, you should give. This is the Christian ethic. This is the basis. To the degree I understand the gracious gift of God and the incredible generosity of God, is directly proportionate to the degree I will graciously give to others with incredible generosity. Let me put it this way. If you don't do anything for the poor, it's because of one of two things. Either A, you've never received the grace of God, or B, you don't understand anything about the grace you received. You say, I think that's a little strong. That is New Testament theology 101. 1 John chapter 3, verse 16. This is the other John 3:16. We know what real love is because Jesus gave up his life for us. You want to know the definition of love? He gave up his life. How much did he give? Everything. How much did he suffer? The worst. Why did he do it? Because he loved. So we also ought to give up our lives for our brothers and sisters. What's he talking about there? Is he talking about jumping in front of the bullet? Taking the bullet for somebody? Could be, but for most people, no. If someone has enough money to live well and sees a brother or sister in need but shows no compassion, how can God's love be in that person? You see, if you know what love is, then you know you need to love like it. And that love is demonstrated in helping the poor. And if you don't help the poor, it's because either you don't know love, what love is, because you've never received it, or you've received it and you still don't understand it. This is basic Christian theology. But the church has gotten way too far away from it. If someone has enough money to live well and sees a brother or sister in need, but shows no compassion, you say, well, who's my brother? Who's my sister? Whoever has the need. I do think the church has a responsibility to care for its own. First, relatives should care for their own. Second, then the church steps in when people can't. But beyond that, Jesus, the parable of the Good Samaritan is when the rich lawyer said, well, who's my brother? And he told the parable of the Good Samaritan, your brother is the one that's in need, whoever that is. If someone has enough money to live well and sees a brother or sister in need but shows no compassion, how can God's love be in that person? What's the answer? It can't. That's startling. That's shocking. If the plight of the poor doesn't move you to some kind of action, then John is saying you need to evaluate whether you're really saved, or if you are saved, you need to be honest and understand you don't have any idea about the gift God gave you. You totally have misunderstood it. Because if you understood what you received, you'd say, the least I could do is give. If you understood you received $1 million, it wouldn't be very hard to give $100,000, would it? I mean, it's that idea. Dear children, let us not merely say we love each other. Let us show the truth by our actions. It's not what you say. I love Jesus. I'm so thankful for what he did for me. Okay, great. That's awesome. Me too. Now, who are you going to love in an over-the-top pouring out of yourself? Who are you going to love like that? It's a very high calling. The last parable Jesus tells in his ministry is really a shocking, almost apocalyptic type parable. It's interesting. The last parable he tells, this the day before he dies. But when the Son of Man comes, Matthew 25, in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit upon his glorious throne, and all the nations gathered in his presence. He will separate the sheep as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He'll place the sheep at his right hand and the goats at his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, the sheep, come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the creation of the world. Why? What did you do? Why the reward? For I was hungry, and you fed me. I was thirsty, and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in to your home. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you cared for me. I was in prison, and you visited me. Then these righteous ones will reply, Lord, when did we ever see you hungry and feed you? Or thirsty and give you something to drink? Or a stranger and show you hospitality? Or naked and give you clothing? When did we ever see you sick or in prison and visit you? The king will say, I tell you the truth. When you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you were doing it to me. They understood grace. They'd received grace, so they understood it and they demonstrated it. Do you see it? Then the king will turn to those on his left, the goats, and say, away with you, you cursed ones, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his demons. For I was hungry and you didn't feed me. I was thirsty and you didn't give me a drink. I was a stranger and you didn't invite me into your home. I was naked and you didn't give me clothing. I was sick. I was in prison and you didn't visit me. And they'll reply, Lord, when did we ever see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not help you? And he will answer, I tell you the truth. When you refused to help the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you were refusing to help me. And they will go away into eternal punishment. But the righteous will go into eternal life. Do you see it? They never received grace, so they never gave it. The mark they hadn't received it was they were stingy. They couldn't hear, they couldn't see, so they did nothing. Now listen, Jesus is not saying, if you want to be saved, help the poor. That's not what he's saying. What he is saying is if you are saved, you will help the poor. If you've received grace, freely you have received. Freely give. Not the coins in the kettle, though that could be part of it. The issue is pour yourself out. Yourself. You know, I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. You did. I was naked and you clothed me. I was a stranger and you invited me in to your home. I want to close with a portion of a message. It's by a guy named Robert Murray M'Cheyne, great Scottish preacher of the 1800s. He preached this in the 1830s from the biblical text, it is more blessed to give than to receive. M'Cheyne said this, now, dear Christian, some of you pray to be made in the image of Christ. If so, you must be like him in giving. Though he was rich, yet for our sakes he became poor. Objection, my money is my own. Answer, Christ might have said, my blood is my own, my life is my own. Then where should we have been? Objection, the poor are undeserving. Answer, Christ might have said the same thing. They are wicked rebels against my Father's love. Shall I lay down my life for these? But no, he gave his blood for the undeserving. Objection, the poor may abuse it. Answer, Christ might have said the same, but with far greater truth. Christ knew that thousands would trample his blood under feet, that most would despise it, that many would make it an excuse for sinning more, yet he gave his own blood. Oh, my dear Christians, if you would be like Christ, give much. Give often. Give freely to the poor, the thankless, and the undeserving. Christ is glorious and happy, and so you will be. It is not your money I want, but your happiness. Remember his own word, it is more blessed to give than to receive.